ECDC On Air,
the podcast of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control.
Keeping up to date with European epidemiology.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for tuning in to ECDC On Air, the podcast of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control. My name is Lee, recording from my headquarters in Stockholm, Sweden. Today we're speaking again with Lara Espinosa to discuss Vibrio and how ECDC uses remote sensing data to monitor its spread in the Baltic Sea during the summer period. So today we're joined again by Lara Espinosa. Lara, we spoke to you previously about Epitweeta. Could you remind us again of your role here at ECDC?
Yes, I'm really glad to be here again. So I'm an expert in the epidemic intelligence team. I have different projects, some of them dealing with the implementation of artificial intelligence in our processes. And part of that is the Epitweeta tool that you mentioned from the previous episode. And then also to support the different activities we do in threat monitoring. One of those is the monitoring of the environmental suitability of Vibrio in the Baltic Sea.
So you mentioned Vibrio there, which is what we're going to be discussing today. I think it's safe to say a lot of people might not be familiar with it. So could you tell us what it is and where it's found?
Yeah, sure. So Vibrio species are aquatic bacteria that can be found in warm estuarines or coastal waters in which the salinity can be low to moderate. There are several species that can be pathogenic to humans, but in this episode, we will focus on the non-cholera Vibrio infections that are related to the bathing or doing other water activities in the Baltic Sea.
Okay, so how did Vibrio end up in the Baltic?
So as mentioned, these Vibrio species can be present in bodies of water with the high surface temperature and low to moderate salinity. Its presence in the Baltic Sea, it's probably a consequence of this increased sea surface temperature that could be due to climate change.
So would you say it's very much a seasonal bacteria that we find?
Exactly. The better conditions for this Vibrio to survive and be present for possible infections are usually in summer periods. But as you know, since the temperatures can change also over the years, it's really good to check what are the temperatures in salinity, because that seasonality could expand over the years.
Okay, so how does ECDC monitor Vibrio, or the incidence of Vibrio, I should say?
So in 2016, ECDC developed a near real-time web-based platform called the ECDC Vibrio Map Viewer to monitor the environmental suitability of Vibrio growth in marine areas. The tool will show you the coastal waters with environmental conditions that are suitable for this bacteria based on daily remote sense sea surface temperature and salinity. It has to be considered that this model has been calibrated to the Baltic region and may not be applicable to other worldwide settings. So it really requires a prior validation in order to be used in other places.
Has the number of confirmed cases of Vibrio increased recently?
Unfortunately, that information is difficult to be properly assessed because the non-cholera vibriosis is not included in the list of notifiable diseases in the European Union. However, there are some countries that report routinely on these cases in their countries.
Okay, so how are the public notified about these incidents of Vibrio, or how should they know what to look out for?
Usually during the summer month, or as I said, when the conditions are available there for this pathogen to appear, countries may do some awareness campaigns to the public to inform them who are more at risk. So, for example, people with immunocompromised systems or open wounds and cuts, and also what are the possible measures that they could take either to prevent or reduce the risk for getting infected with non-cholera Vibrio species. So that could include staying out of the coastal waters, covering their wounds with a waterproof bandage, or washing those wounds or cuts thoroughly after contact with coastal water. In any case, people should really follow their advice provided by the national and local health authorities accordingly.
Now, you've mentioned cholera a couple of times there. What's the difference between vibriosis and cholera?
The difference between vibriosis and cholera lays in the species and serotypes involved, the symptoms, transmission, and the severity. there are two serogroups of the Brevio cholera, which is one of the species that produce the toxin that causes the disease that we call cholera. The other species and serotype are commonly called non-cholera species and are responsible for causing vibriosis. Then cholera has a fecal oral transmission only, whereas the non-cholera vibriosis could also have other routes of transmission, such as having an open wound in contact with contaminated coastal water. And then lastly, there are common and different factors that will determine the severity of the disease for both cholera and vibriosis.
So what would the symptoms of vibriosis be, the non-cholera version?
When getting vibriosis through contact with contaminated coastal water, meaning through an open wound, the symptoms usually are a consequence of skin infection. And that includes redness, swollen, and pain in the affected area. However, in some cases, especially those that are higher risk, this can lead to more severe symptoms, including intensive care or even limb amputation.
How can people stay safe if they do decide to go swimming in the Baltic Sea in the summer? Or is it best to avoid swimming in the Baltic in the summer in general? Or would this be throughout the summer season or just certain periods of the summer?
The environmental suitability of Vibrio in the Baltic Sea may vary during the summer season. So there may be some peaks in which the conditions are more favorable than others. ECDC publishes on a weekly basis an update on the previous days, on how the conditions were, and also forecast for the next 5 days. So in this case, people should refer to their public health institutions for further advice and awareness, and to their general practitioner in case they have any compatible symptoms after bathing in these areas.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the Baltic in particular, but are there other bodies of water in Europe where we might see Vibrio grow? Or indeed anywhere else?
There are some studies that have found Vibrio species in other bodies of water in Europe, like, for example, the North Sea. And there's some cases reported in the scientific literature of cases being exposed to other bathing sites developing these severe consequences, as I mentioned, which is called necrotizing fasciitis, just to make it simple, something more severe than just a skin infection. It has to be also considered that it's true that the salinity and temperature are the main factors to ensure that the Vibrio will stay there and grow. But there's also another factor which can be to include, or let's say to have the bacteria appearing in new places by transmission, for example, via fecal contamination of the water. So that's also important to keep in mind that even though in some places in the past there was no presence of Vibrio, that doesn't mean that it may not appear or that people should not be worried at all.
Is there anything that can be done to reduce the growth of Vibrio? Obviously, you've mentioned it's very much dependent on environmental factors. Other than cooling the water in the Baltic, is there anything that can be done to reduce it?
Yes, in these cases, since we have a ubiquitous bacteria, once the bacteria is there, the best option is to prevent infection or serious disease. It would be more efficient and probably easier to get better results. In the case that the bacteria is not there, then there are other measures that can be put in place by the different countries to ensure not only for this bacteria, but for other pathogenic bacteria to appear in these bodies of water and then later on to increase their presence.
I think it's been very informative to learn a little bit about Vibrio today. As I said, I don't think it's something that a lot of people have heard of or are necessarily aware of what it actually is. So it's always good to be able to make sure people are aware of it. You mentioned the map that people can look at that tracks the incidence. Obviously, now the summer is over, hopefully the rates will go down. But looking forward, do you think it's more likely that we'll see incidents of Vibrio continuing further throughout the year? Or would you say that now the summer is over, people can worry about it a little bit less?
Yeah, so indeed, we've seen it in the past year, especially with the increased temperature during the cold summer period. We usually stop the monitoring not related to the calendar month, but related to the forecast of risk of having this bacteria in the water. So definitely the time during the year can change, and it is expected if the temperature keeps increasing and the summers are being longer, that the monitoring and the risk of contracting these infections will also increase in parallel.
Well, thank you for your time today, Laura. We will put links to the tool in the notes of this episode. And if people are curious to find out more about it, we can direct them to the ECDC website. So thank you again. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode on Vibrio. If you would like to see the map or for more information on Vibrio in general, please see the notes of this episode. If you'd like to know more about ECDC, please visit ecdc.europa.eu or follow us on social media for the latest news.